prayer effective. We dealt with bitachon. What does it mean to trust God? We dealt with the concept of Hoshin Mishpat. And today we are tackling the thorniest of all issues. This is perhaps the greatest issue, as we will see. The problem of evil, otherwise known as theodicy or tzaddik v'ra'lo. So just a couple points before we begin, how we're going to do this. This is a major, major topic. And we always try to strike a balance between doing justice to the topic, but not getting bogged down in what could be, you know, a year's worth of learning. So I envision this to be between 2 or 3, maybe 4 classes, depending on how it goes, depending on your feedback. Please feel free to do, you know, send me any ideas to discuss the problem of evil. Okay, so the source material went out. It should all be in, it should be in that in the email. And you know what? I'm going to drop it in the chat in case anyone did not get it, and then we will actually begin. All right, now it's in the chat as well. The problem of evil. This is perhaps, as we pointed out, the thorniest of all issues. In fact, this is such an important issue, the problem of evil, that everyone talks about it, everyone deals with it. What is the problem of evil? Tzadik v'ra'lo. How is it that the righteous suffer and the wicked seem to prosper? Where is God? Why is there suffering in this world? God, if you're so powerful, how come there's so much suffering? Put differently, where is God during the Holocaust? Where is God throughout suffering? How could there be suffering? Now, we're actually going to devote the next class to really tackling the question. The question, there's so much to unpack the question. And today we're not going to even deal with the problem of evil and the question of evil. Rather, we're going to deal with a question that has to come before we even address the problem of evil. What is the question? Are we even allowed to ask about Tzadik v'ra'lo? Are we even allowed to ask about the question, where was God during suffering? Where was God during the Holocaust? Until now, as you noted, we were dealing with questions that were very much us-centered. How can I pray? How is my prayer effective? Who do I trust? How do I trust? When do I go to work? When do I say it's all in God's hand? This is a very different question, because this question is not about us, but it's about God. We are going and questioning God and saying, God, justify suffering. Explain to me why there is so much evil. Explain to me why there could be natural catastrophes or human, you know, human evil and human perpetrated attacks and whatever it may be. So this is a question on God, and that's why this is such a weighty question. And that's why this question is so different. And that's why I'm going to propose, maybe we're not allowed to ask this question. Who are we to come before God and say, I'm going to question your ways? Who are we, little me, to come before the great God and say, I have a problem with what you're doing? It's God. God probably knows what he's doing. So before we even address and try to come to figure out what is the problem of evil, how could there be evil? Let's ask, are we allowed to ask this question? This is, because this question, as we pointed out, is so weighty that the Ramban, in Nachmani's source number one in his Akdama to Iyov, his introduction to Iyov, right? What is Job? What is Iyov? The whole book is about a man who suffers. He loses his family. He loses his money. He loses everything. And it's a dialogue between him, between God, between his brethren who come to comfort him, really about this problem of this question of evil, this question of theodicy. Theodicy is the philosophical term. Literally, it means God justice, theodicy, God of justice. It was coined by Gottfried, I hope I pronounced his name right, Leibniz in 1710. So the Ramban writes, this is such an important question, that he says, look at source number one, V'yesh dovar mikayiv halavavos umediv hamachshavos. This really hurts and hurts people's hearts, and it really bothers people. Mimenu levado nimshechu kol hadoros l'kfira gemura. It is this question alone, he says, that has led more people into heresy, more people to abandon the ways of God because they were so troubled by why do the righteous suffer? Vuarob ol mishpo meuko v'tzadik v'ra'lo yirashim v'tovlo. They look at the world, they see things seem to be out of whack. How can it be there's so much suffering? This is the source, not just in Judaism, he says, but in every single religion. The greatest pitfall is this question. We want to know, can we even ask this question? Can we even ask this question? Another reason why this is such a weighty question is because it really affects every one of us. You know, some more than others, but there's a certain sensitivity we need to have when we ask this question. It's very easy to say, why do the righteous suffer? Why do they, and you talk about evil and you give some sort of philosophical answer and everyone goes home. But it's much more acute than that because everyone in a way is affected by some sort of suffering. You know, whether it's, you know, something terrible or it's, you know, something a little seemingly lighter, we all have our pekula, our things we deal with. And just think about where we're living right now. We're living in a time where we can turn to God and say, God, why is it that, you know, in the last 9 months, so much has changed in the way we know things. We've lost so many people, so many young people, leaders, and Klal Yisrael have passed away. We stuck at home. We're dealing with loneliness, depression. We're all dealing with something. So the question is so much more acute because it's not just, okay, we pray, we don't pray. I believe very important things. I trust, I don't trust. But we need to tread with a certain sensitivity to recognize that this has very real nafkaminas, real ramifications in everyone's daily life. In fact, Rav Nachman put it in a very powerful and beautiful way. Rav Nachman in source number two. Rav Nachman was someone who was the grandson of Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidim, and he was someone who suffered with depression and anxiety. He was someone who didn't have the easiest life. And he died at a young age from sickness. And therefore, throughout his work, he talks a lot about suffering. He talks a lot about, you know, living with uncertainty, with anxiety. And he says the following. It's very powerful. Dibar yimonu kama pa'amim. We spoke many times. Now, the Rav Nachman, Likutei Maharan, was actually written by his Talmud Rav Nosson. It wasn't written by Rav Nachman himself. He wrote very, very little. In fact, I think he wrote maybe just one letter or so. So Rav Nosson says, many times we spoke. Me'inyin yisuri olam haza. About the afflictions and the pain of this world. Shekol b'nei ha'olam kulam milayin yisurim. Everyone in this world is full of suffering. Ein gam echad shiyela olam hazeh. There is absolutely no one who's not plagued, who has olam hazeh. Va'afilu ha'ashirim ha'gadolim va'afilu ha'sarim. You look at the people who are wealthy, you look at the officers, the people who look like they have it all together. Even then, ein lahem shum olam hazeh klal. He called Yemeim Ka'es Umichavos. All their days, he says, are full of frustration and grief. The Kulameim Tirdom with the Agos, Atsuvos, Vyogun Vanacha Tamid. He says they're full of troubles and worries, misery, sadness, and aggravation always. Chol Echad Yeshlom Yisurim Yuchad, and everyone has their own individual and particular woe. Ve'engam Echad Mikol Agvirim Vasirim. Now, even the wealthy people, look like they have it together. She'el Akol Keseder Keratzen Tamid. They never have it together all the time. When you go behind closed doors, who knows what it looks like? The kulam ke'echad malein yisur medagos tamid. And he goes on and on to talk about it. He said, you look at someone, they look like they have it together, look like they have everything, but in fact, you have no idea what happens behind closed doors. Everyone deals with their pekalach. Everyone deals with their affliction. Everyone deals with their depression. And he says so powerfully, on of Omar, he called out and he said, he declared, look down, I skipped down to the last paragraph on that source. Hine kol omrim sheis olam hazeh ve'olam haba. Everyone says there's olam hazeh ve'olam haba. There's this world and there's the next world. This world has what it has, the world of physicality and the spiritual in the next world. V'hine olam haba anu ma'aminim. We know, we believe that ultimately there will be a next world. Eshar gam yesh olam hazeh. He goes, perhaps there really is an olam hazeh. Perhaps there is a world, a this world. Gam kei ve'ez olam. Maybe it's somewhere. Ki bekan, says Rav Nachman so powerfully, nira shehu ha-gehenim. All I see is Gehenim. All I see is hell. Ki kula malein yusirim gedolim tamid. Says Rav Nachman, because so many people are in pain. There's so much affliction. There's so much torment. There's so much sorrow. It's there. It's real. You can't ignore it. And that's why I think we have to tread so carefully when we discuss this issue, because it's so real for so many of us. If you look at source number three, there's a powerful poem that my grandfather introduced to me by Edwin Arlington Robinson. Now, two things I want to note about this. One is Simon and Garfunkel stole it and used it as a song. And two is, if you notice the font is in Comic Sans. That is because every time my grandfather says anything to me, it's in Comic Sans. So this is for him. Now, this is the following poem. I really think encapsulate what Rav Nachman's driving at and the sensitivity we need to have as we approach this topic in the coming weeks. Whenever Richard Corey went down to town, we people on the pavement looked at him. He was a gentleman from sole to crown, clean, favored, and imperially slim. And he was always quietly arrayed, and he was always human when he talked. But still he fluttered pulses when he said, good morning, and he glittered when he walked. And he was rich, yes, richer than a king, and admirably schooled in every grace. In fine, we thought that he was everything to make us wish that we were in his place. Here is a man, the people are looking at him and saying, we want to be like him. He has everything. Now, why is it fair that he has everything we suffer? We the common man. So on we worked and waited for the night and went without the meat and cursed the bread. And Richard Corey, one calm summer night, went home and put a bullet through his head. And I think using this idea of Richard Corey, of this Rav Nachman, it just, the reason I brought up is to highlight the sensitivity again. I can't say it over and over again as we approach this topic to recognize that there might not be answers. And even the question opens raw wounds for some. So we tread with the sensitivity. So now back to our question. What right do we have to ask this question? Are we allowed to ask this question? If you look in source number 4, there's a pasuk in Shemos, the verse in Exodus. The context is Moses is at the pinnacle of his career. He's standing on Har Sinai, and he just received the Torah, and he's engaging God in conversation. And he says, Va'ata, im namatzasi chen be'enecha, hudi'ani na esterachecha. Says Moses, therefore I pray, I turn to you, God, and please, if I find favor in your eyes, show me your ways. What does that mean, show me your ways? Says the Gemara in Brachos. Moses says to God, God, which name ma yesh sadik v'tovlo v'yesh rasha v'ra'lo. Why is it that the righteous suffer, and there are evil people who prosper. Yesh, Rosh, Ralo, etc. He asked this question. Why is it that there's evil in this world? Why is it that it seemingly there's injustice, and you mete out your justice unevenly? Someone who's good their whole life struggles, and someone who looks like they're an evil person, who's a devious person, has everything. So that Moses asked the question. Before we get to what his answer is, there's another Gemara which seems to be more troubling. There was a man by the name of Elisha ben Avuya. Who was Elisha ben Avuya? Elisha ben Avuya was the leader of Klal Yisrael. He was the rabbi. You know, we have like little rabbis and big rabbis. He was like the big rabbi. Like his baseball card, rabbi card, it went for a lot of money. And one day, Elisha ben Avuya took off his hat or his frock or whatever they used to wear then, hung it on the shelf, left the base medrash, and turned his back on everything. We're talking about not like, you know, some little rabbi. We're talking like the rabbi. Like think of the scandal across the pages. You know, head rabbi, chief rabbi, leaves it all, no longer religious, wants nothing to do with the Jewish people. So much so, the Talmud records one time, he was riding on his horse on Yom Kippur. And I believe some say he was even eating. Like he was done. So everyone wants to know, like, what happened to him? What? He was like the rabbi. How did he walk away from everything? The Talmud Yerushalmi records a story. It has a couple stories. But one of the stories stands out. He was walking one day, and he saw a father turn to his son and say, can you please do me a favor? Go to the tree over there. Send away the mother bird and take the eggs. The halacha is, the Torah tells us that if you want to take the eggs from a mother bird, you must send away the mother bird so that she doesn't see the pain of losing her eggs. And the Torah says something striking, doesn't say in other places. By the mitzvah of kivud av'eim, by the mitzvah of honoring the parents, and the mitzvah of shluach ha'kein, of sending away the mother bird, both times the Torah promises, if you do these things, you will live a long life. Now we know, the Talmud tells us, long life doesn't mean actually physical long life. The Torah is not promising you that. The Torah is saying you're going to get a lot of mitzvos, you're going to live a long life in the world to come. Elisha ben Avoya didn't read it that way. Because what happened? The boy climbs onto the ladder up to the tree. He slips and tragically falls and passes away. Says Elisha ben Avoya, what happened? He was doing the two commandments of the Torah that promised him long life and he died. Zu Torah, this is the Torah. Zu Schorasa, this is the reward for keeping the Torah. I'm done. And he walked away. The Gemara says, Ika Damri. Maybe that's not what happened. Said that during the Hadrianic decrees, the Emperor Hadrian, a Roman emperor who was absolutely horrific to the Jews, killed thousands and thousands of Jews. And among them, he killed many of the leaders of Klal Yisrael. And he tortured them. It said he went to one of the rabbis and he cut out his tongue. And when Elisha ben Avoya saw that, he said, how can it be that the tongue that taught so much Torah, the person who taught so much Torah gets tortured? Zu Torah, this is the Torah. Zu Schorasa, this is the reward. I'm done. And he walked away. What it seems to imply that asking the question, this is the Torah, this is the reward, by saying, how can God have such evil? That's the beginning of heresy. That's how you become a heretic. We should not be asking this question. One more, we'll take it a step further. On Musaf on Yom Kippur, in the Yom Kippur liturgy, we read a very interesting poem. It's clear why it shows up there. It doesn't make sense necessarily. While we're reading all about the Beis Hamikdash and the Kohen Gadol and all the things they did in Yom Kippur, we read the poem of Eile Ezkara. On these I will remember. And it's a poem, it's about the 10 Asari Harugi Malchus, 10 of the greatest leaders of the Jewish people during the times of the temple who were murdered. Now, the poem itself, the source for it goes back very, very far. It goes back, source to all different sorts of Midrashim, but it's not historically accurate. As in these 10 people didn't live at the same time, they didn't even overlap, but it's poetry in a way. It's sad poetry, tragic poetry. The poet wanted to take, you know, these 10 people were killed in a span of 100, 200 years, and he wrote a poem about them. It's a very graphic poem. It's a very startling poem, and as it goes through and describes how each one of these leaders was killed. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, the poem records the angels turned to God. Source number 7, Sarfe Malat Saku Bamaro. The holy angels cry out bitterly, Zu Torah, this is the Torah. Zu Schorasa, this is the reward. Otu Kasimla Ora, creator of light, Oiv Minoat Simcha God of Anoru Mechariv Begadev Al Divrei Torah. He goes, look how the enemy of the Jewish people blasphemes God. They take our leaders and they kill them. What's that saying about you, God, and your power? Zu Torah, Zu Schorasa. Asking the same question. Said the angels are saying to God, how can you do this? Where is justice? How is there evil? Theodicy, our question. And what does God respond? Anasa Baskel Mishamayim, a voice calls out from heaven. Im Eshma Kol Acher. If I hear another word, I will turn the world back to water. This is my decree, says God. Accept it. Accept it, all those of you who love the Torah for the last 2,000 years. God responds not with, it's okay you asked the question, but this is what I decreed. Not with, you know, let's sit down, let's have a little kumzitz, I'll explain to you why and how, you know, the mysteries of the universe, none of that. He doesn't say, let's have a shiur and a big questions, and then it'll bring meaning to your life. God says, if I hear another word from you, I'm ending the world. You know, it's kind of like when, after my son doesn't listen to me for the 10th time, I hear another word from you, you're going to your room for the night, it's over. That seems to imply similar to Elisha ben Avoya. The same words. Zu Torah, Zu Scharasa. You question God's ways. God says, I am turning the world back to water. I am turning the world back to the way it was pre-creation. Rav Soloveitchik explains it doesn't actually mean he's going to bring a flood and flood the world. Rather, it means God's good. I'm going to hide myself. I'm going to let nature take its course. What do we see here? It seems to be we shouldn't ask this question. We can talk about bitachon. We can talk about our relationship to God. We can talk about, you know, our own davening and why our davening is effective. But don't question God's ways. Don't ask about divine justice. Don't ask, where's the merciful God when we look at the world and there's so much pain and suffering. However, there's a flip side to this. Gemara Menachos on Chavtes Amid Beis records the following story. While Moses is standing on the mountaintop and talking to God, he said to God, I want to know, what's the future? What's the future? In fact, he says, it's a little more than that. Moshe recognizes that if anyone sees the Sefer Torah, now, I think I was supposed to put if you actually look at the previous page, source number 4, on source number 4, you see there's a psukim. In the psukim, it says, Vata imna matzasi chen beinecha. You can see on top of the ayin, and on top of the nun, as in the second letter, you see the word, there's like little crowns on top of the ayin. There's little crowns on top of the nun, the sixth letter there. These crowns are in every single Torah. So God says to Moses says to God, God, tell me, what's the point of those crowns? What words again? Why are you decorating the Torah? And God says, because one day there's going to be a great man by the name of Akiva, and he's going to use those to interpret parts of the Torah. So Moses says, I want to see this Akiva. God takes him, brings him to the classroom of Akiva teaching, and the Torah records that Moses didn't understand a word that Rabbi Akiva was saying. Didn't understand anything. And he got a little distraught. He's like, what do you mean? I thought this is the Torah, and he's teaching. I don't understand what he's talking about. Until finally someone asked a question. Someone raised their hand and said, no, Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, where do you know this from? And Rabbi Akiva says, I know this because I learned this from my teacher, who learned from this teacher, who learned it from Moses, all the way back in Har Sinai. So then Moshe was mollified. He was better. The Gemara then records in the course of this conversation, if Rabbi Akiva is such a great person that he's able to figure out what the little crowns on top of the Torah, what they represent, why didn't you give the Torah through him? Why do you turn to me? Go to this guy, Rabbi Akiva. He should be the one to teach the Torah. He says, so Chazar Baal of Nekar Ishbrach on the Funai, source number 8, Ribonus Olam, God, Master of the World, Yeshla Lecha Adam Kazeb Ata Nosin Torah Ayadi. This man seems so great, and little me gives the Torah. Omalei Shtok, God says, quiet. Kach Ole B'machshava. This is what I wanted. These are my intentions. This is what I wanted. So Moshe goes on and says, well, at least God tell me. What's the end of Rabbi Akiva? Like, what's his final reward? What does he get for being someone who's such a great teacher of Torah? So God takes him and shows him the end of Rabbi Akiva's life, which is as you would have seen in the Pia in that Yom Kippur, the end of Rabbi Akiva's life. Tragically, he's tortured by the Romans and killed. Says Moshe, and he looks at this horrific and excruciating death of Rabbi Akiva, and he says the following: Zu Torah v'zus charasa. This is the very same words as Elisha ben Avuya. The very same words as the Malach. And he says, this is the Torah. This is the reward. What does God say? God doesn't scream at him, if I hear another word out of you, you know, you're losing your bike privileges for a month. Or, you know, turn the world back to Sovavo. God says, shtok, quiet. Kach olav machshav lefanai. He used the same exact expression he said before. Quiet. These are my intentions. These are my ways. God doesn't scream at him. God doesn't yell at him. God just says, be quiet. You don't understand. The ways of God are mysterious. My ways are mysterious. So we have this problem. On the one hand, Elisha ben Avuya, we see he said, Zutar Zus Harasa. He asked the question. He said, how can it be? Where is God in suffering? How can God cause suffering in this world? Maybe there is no God. If there was a good God, God wouldn't cause suffering. A question we're going to address next week. And we see what happened to him. That was the door that opened up to him to ultimately leave Klal Yisrael to say, I want nothing to do with this people. We have the Malachim, the Malchi Asharis. They turn to God and they say, God, how can you do this? And God says another word out of you, I'll end the world. And yet we have Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, who says the very same thing, Zutora, Zutcharasa. And God doesn't yell at him, but God, either God says, quiet, you won't understand my ways. Or the Gemara and Brachas we saw before tries to say maybe God did answer him, but he didn't understand. Where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? What's the answer? Can we ask the question? Can we not? I think the answer is if Moses asked the question, then certainly we can ask the question. What was different about the way Moses asked the question, Elisha ben Avoy asked the question? The continuation of the Gemara in the Gemara in Yerushalmi. When Elisha ben Avoy asked the question, he wasn't asking a question. He said, Zu Torah, Zu Zchorasa. And he goes on to say, Domesh ain matan schar v'en tchias ha-mesim. Says Elisha ben Avoy, if this is the Torah, if this is the reward, there must not be schar v'onish, there must not be a God, there must not be a divine system, there must be no morals, there's no need to do good because there is no God. Elisha ben Avoy wasn't asking the question, he was declaring it. He was, when he saw the tragedy happen, he said, Zu Torah v'zu scharasa, this is the Torah, this is the reward, no, I want nothing to do with this. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu was asking. He didn't have an exclamation mark at the end, he had a question mark. He was saying, God, Zu Torah, Zu scharasa, how can it be? And the lesson of this is that when we see suffering, when we encounter great pain, as long as we have the question mark, as long as we are there with humility and recognize that maybe there's an answer, maybe there's something happening here, we have the humility to recognize there's a question. Even if that question mark is so small, even if we're in so much pain, even if we're angry and we're yelling at God, we're saying, God, how can it be? As long as there's a question mark, as small as it might be, then it's okay to ask the question. Then it's okay to engage in this pursuit. But once we passed over and we're exclaiming, and we're saying, there is no God. Zu Torah, Zu Scharasa, I'm done. Then it becomes inappropriate. Then it enters into the heresy. I think perhaps even this is what Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Berkovitz was driving at in his book, Faith After the Holocaust, which we'll encounter in future weeks. Dr. Eliezer Berkovitz was a fascinating thinker. He was from Germany, I believe. He was a Talmud of the Sfardi Yeshiva of Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. And he actually, Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg wrote four very important volumes of Shilas and Tshuvos, a question and answers, a halachic work called Srudei Esh, The Remnants of the Fire. Remnants of the Fire being that these were questions that he answered coming from Jews during his time in the Warsaw Ghetto, during the time of, he was in Germany, of the rise of the Nazis, until he eventually was smuggled out and he made it to Switzerland. But his manuscripts, many of them were lost. There were a couple, I think it was two or three volumes, that Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Berkovitz was able to smuggle out and bring them to, of all places, Skokie, Illinois. So he was here in Skokie in Chicago. He was at some point, I don't know if he was the rabbi of Or Torah, he definitely had some sort of affiliation. Someone's going to correct me, someone who's been here longer than me, which is everyone here, can tell me later or write in the chat how long he's here for. So he wrote a book called Faith After the Holocaust. And in it he wrote that people who kept their faith after the Holocaust, in a way, are an insult to those who lost their faith, and people who lost their faith are an insult to those who have their faith. Because he said, what he was trying to say is that, in a way, we all have our own individual perspective, and we all have things that some things push one person over the edge, and some things don't. But then he goes on to say, but even those who lost their faith, who question God, have a holy disbelief, having gone through what they go through, but yet they're still engaging in the question, because even them, he wanted to say, very small as it might be, and as angry as it might be, there's still a small question mark. As much as they're saying, Zu Torah, Zu Scharasa, there's still a little question here, Zu Torah, maybe Zu Scharasa, answer my question. And I think that's what happened with Moshe Rabbeinu as well. God doesn't answer Moshe Rabbeinu, but God doesn't get upset at him because what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu sees such a great, heinous act happening to Akiva, and he just utters it. He says it. Zu Torah, Zu Scharasa. It's a natural human response. And the question is not one of heresy. It's the question we all have the right to ask. And in fact, if you look at source number 9, 10, and 11, we see throughout, replete throughout Tanakh, throughout Nevi'im, the question is asked. Habakkuk says, He says, why, God, you gaze upon these traitors? Be silent when a wicked man swallows up one more righteous than he. Why are you quiet, God, when the wicked push down the righteous? Yirmiyahu Jeremiah, Tzadik Avta Hashem, God, you are righteous. Ki orav elecha, ach mishpatim adav roscha, madu aderech hasham teilecha. Why is it, he says, do the wicked prosper? Tehillim, this is a fascinating Tehillim, and hopefully we'll return to it in future weeks. Mizmar la'asaf, a psalm of Asaf. Ach tov l'Yisrael l'kim l'vari leiv. God is truly good to Israel, to those whose heart is pure. Va'ani kemat nitoi ragli ke'ein shuvchi ashrecha. He says, but me, I was straight, I was led off course. Ki kanisi ba'alim shalom risham era. For I envied the wanton, I saw the wicked at ease. Asaf, too, is bothered by this. How is it, he says, that I got swayed off course. Almost sounds like he had a crisis of faith. He had this doubt. When I saw the righteous get pushed down, and I saw the wicked at ease, the wicked enjoying themselves, the wicked somehow perpetrating whatever may be a crime and living the good life. So we see throughout Tanakh, from Moshe Rabbeinu to Habakkuk, Yirmiyahu, the question is asked. And again, we are not going to address the question tonight, but this is more as a preliminary shir. This is a hakdama, an introduction to the question, where we discuss the sensitivity we need to have, because everyone struggles, even those who don't look like they struggle. We don't know what happened, what's inside people's heads, what everyone's gone through. We discuss are you able to ask the question? And now, I think one more important point we should discuss, and that is that this is a very difficult question. And there are the answers aren't going to satisfy everyone. And it's going to be a struggle. It's going to be difficult. If we truly engage in this endeavor, if we truly ask ourselves, what's happening here? How could there be so much evil? We're going to have to struggle with it and think about it and really and muse over and ponder, what is it? How is this happening? Rabbi Soloveitchik, in a celebrated and famous footnote 4 in Halachic Man, notes that we can't turn to religion just for solace. He said, religion is not here just to provide us comfort. Religion is about a struggle. And I think he's essentially validating the struggle that we have to go through when we think about such a weighty question. He says, we'll skip the second paragraph. He's talking about an ideology that basically says, you turn to religion, everything will be good. You turn to religion, you'll be happy, you'll have a good family, you'll have money, prosperity, all is good. He said this ideology, source number 12, is intrinsically false and deceptive. The religious consciousness in man's experience, which is most profound and most elevated, which penetrates to the very depth and ascends to the very heights, is not that simple and comfortable. On the contrary, it is exceptionally complex, rigorous, and torturous. Where you find its complexity, there you find its greatness. Only born out of complexity, born out of struggle, will you achieve greatness. Only born out of sacrifice, as the Rav often says, will you come to a place of equilibrium, of equanimity, a place of where things start to make sense. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind that this is not going to be easy, and it's okay to struggle over it. It's okay to ask these questions, because Moshe Rabbeinu asks these questions, and as long as we're honestly asking and seeking an answer, then we can ask and push and push and push. Lastly, I want to quote from Rabbi Sachs. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs passed away last week. In his faith lectures, Judaism, Justice, and Tragedy, Confronting the Problem of Evil, he says the following. That is the question that gives Abraham no peace. Here, if I am right, that is the starting point of Jewish faith. In Judaism, faith does not begin with an answer. It begins with a question. It doesn't begin in harmony. It begins in dissonance. Here it is. If God created the world, then God created man. Why then does God allow man to destroy the world? How can we reconcile the order of the world with the disorder of human society? Can God have made the world only to desert it? That is Abraham's question. Eshar shav olam bli manik. Maybe there's a world without a leader. Can it be the world has no one in charge, no owner? That is his question. In other words, faced with the conflicting evidence between order and chaos, between God and evil, it would have been easy to deny the reality of one or the other, to say there is no God or there is no evil. Either we deny God, in which case we have despair, or we deny evil, in which case we have consolation. Judaism refuses the premature and easy option. Despair on the one hand, consolation on the other. If either of these logical alternatives were true, either there is no justice or everything in the world is just, then we would live at peace with the world. But to be a Jew is to refuse those easy answers and to live within the tension, which is evil as real and therefore rejects premature consolation, acceptance of the world. It is also to say that God is real and therefore hope is not an illusion. If God exists, then life has purpose. If evil exists, then we have not achieved that purpose. Says Rabbi Sacks, and this is something he talks about very, very often, that on the one hand, when we approach this question, and we are going to struggle with this question, and we are going, you know, as Abraham struggled with God and said, God, how can you destroy Sodom? How can you perpetrate evil? And Abraham questioned God, a holy chutzpah. And on the other hand, we have to also ask ourselves, have we made peace with evil in our lives? Is there evil in our lives that we are able to put out, that we are able to put a stop to, that we are not? It's twofold. So now he flipped it, inverted this. We have a question on God and we have a question on us. Rabbi Sacks quotes a midrash. He quotes this famously in his work, A Letter in the Scroll. It says, Abraham is walking. He's walking in the desert. We're used to the Abraham. Who's Abraham? Why was Abraham the father? What made him the patriarch? Because God came to him one day and said, Abraham, lech lecha. Abraham, leave. There's a different story. A different way. The Midrash records, it wasn't God chose Abraham, but rather Abraham is walking in the desert. And he sees smoke in the distance. So he's on his donkey or whatever. He's riding his camel. And he gets closer. And he sees there's a building on fire. And as he gets closer, he realizes it's not any building. It's a palace. Billowing smoke, flames shooting out of it. And he says, if there's a palace, surely there's someone who built the palace. Surely there's an owner. And then he realizes, a voice calls out and said, I'm the owner, it's me, God. So Abraham says, God, your palace is on fire, put it out. And God responds, the palace is in your world. It's your job to put it out. Look at the world. God may have created the world, but he also gave it to man. And while we may have questions of why is there evil, we also have to question ourselves. What role do we have? Can we play to mitigate that evil? What role can we play to help put out the little fires that crop up everywhere? Whether it's, you know, we're sitting at home, we can donate a little money somewhere, daven a little, pray a little. All of us also have it within our hands to help partner with God and subdue and some of the evil that's happening in the world. So therefore, we have this double charge. On the one hand, we struggle and we wrestle. And yes, we should struggle. And we should wrestle as long as we are still asking. We could wrestle and not make peace with evil and try to figure out why God allows evil to happen. On the other hand, the second part of this dual charge is to ask ourselves, what role can I play? What can I do to help make this world a better place for the rest of us? Everyone should have a wonderful night. And looking forward to next week, where we're going to actually tackle the issue at hand. How could there be evil? You know, with this question of theodicy in a broader and a more precise way.
Yisr koach.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, if you could just fill out the form on the side, and I'll post one more time, just so we have your information so we can send you things in the future. So just let you know about classes. And one more scheduling note. Next week, we are on Erev Thanksgiving. The week after Thanksgiving, which is the 2nd of December, we are off. And then we're going to be off on Hanukkah as well, which I believe is the 16th. But you'll get an email about that, or you won't get the email beforehand. So everyone, again, should have a wonderful night. Please feel free to email me in the email I put there, ycats@torahchicago.org, with any questions, suggestions, ideas for future classes. And please fill out the form.
Terrific. Thank you very much, Rabbi Katz.
Thank you, Rabbi Katz.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very nice.
Good night.